Hello and welcome to What the Hack, the show that is dedicated to taking all aspects of cybersecurity and breaking them down into easy to understand bites. My name is Sean, a cybersecurity professional working in the Aberdeen, Scotland area. This week I'm joined by Melanie Oldham from Bob's Business. Melanie is the founder and the driving force behind Bob's Business, an award-winning and leading cybersecurity awareness training and phishing simulations provider. Melanie challenges the traditional approach of security training by recognizing that employees can be the strongest defense against cyber attacks. She is a real advocate for empowering the workforce from the bottom up to be cyber aware and in turn cyber resilient. As well as being the CEO of Bob's Business, Melanie acts as an advisor to the government and holds a number of board positions advising on cyber skills, growth, and how to create a secure, equal, and diverse culture across the cybersecurity sector. Melanie has racked up over 10 years of experience in the cybersecurity sector and has become a reputable and well-respected force within the industry, having recently been awarded a fellowship, the highest level of attainment, by the Chartered Institute of Information Security. She's also the founder of the Yorkshire Cybersecurity Cluster, a collaborative group that works together to reduce cybersecurity within the region. The cluster brings together local businesses, academics, the police, and experts to discuss, collaborate, and educate on the key issues facing the region. We hope you enjoy. Thanks, Melanie, for agreeing to join us, separating your digital life to, I suppose you separate it in different aspects between your personal and your professional and all that kind of thing. So I've got a bunch of questions that we're going to be talking through. But I guess the where to start would be why we chose this topic in the first place. It obviously relates quite heavily to what you do for a living, and why are you so passionate about the idea of separating your life into these kind of things for digital purposes?
Yeah, definitely. I think basically it all comes down to resilience, and I think the more that you can actually separate the different aspects of your life into different boxes, the more resilient you're going to be. Because one of the problems that we have is when everything's connected, if something gets sort of infected, it infects the whole lot of us. And it's, I guess I liken it a little bit to bullying and being at school. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of people that suffer from bullying at school, and I did myself when I was younger. And it was really, really hard because you're surrounded by it. You know you've got to go into it every day and the pressure sort of builds up. But what was quite nice is the fact that I was able to step away from that and I was able to have part-time jobs. Elsewhere, where I was a different person that wasn't subjected to sort of the nastiness that happened at school, and it gave me my personality, my confidence back. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that you have now with the digital world is everybody's connected. So if somebody does something or says something that's nasty or infectious or in any way damaging to yourself, your brand, your company, then it spreads like wildfire. So my advice, especially to parents, is try to get your kids to create boxes and put all the different elements of social in different areas so that if something does go a little bit septic and a little bit wrong, then you can isolate it and deal with it a lot better. And it's actually easier to delete an online account to a degree than it is actually physically to pull yourself away from a group that's slightly toxic. But having that control is something completely within your hands. Mm-hmm. And making sure that it's, you know, from a digital point of view, you're not as easy to find. And I think that's, you know, one of my biggest bugbears when it's talking about cybersecurity and creating online accounts and online profiles is how readily everybody uses their first name and their last name in all their username accounts. And this, to me, you know, is one of the best practice things we should, you know, be creating and telling kids really early on is, mm-hmm. is don't use your first name and your last name to identify you. You know, what character could you be? Because you can be absolutely anybody mm-hmm. online. Just to make your visibility less though, I guess.
Yeah, it's really interesting you talk about that. Actually, you're talking about how readily available their first and last name is. But what I was shocked at is I spoke to a classroom of, I think it was about 14-year-olds, and. Mm-hmm. I explained to them how easy it is to find information about you without actually doing anything illegal or in any way shady. And the reason for it being is because they readily put the information up there for everyone to see. So I spent about an hour with them and I just picked someone out of the class. They volunteered to do this. Now I said, what can I find out about you? And I found out their name, their address, their date of birth, the route that they took to their school, everything, their parents' names, their kid, their pets' names, their siblings, everything that I could find. That was just an hour, and again, didn't do anything illegal, didn't do anything clever. It was just simply searching them and researching and diving in a little bit. So I completely understand where you're coming from in that. So yeah, it sort of leads us into the first question that we have pretty nicely, actually, because as we're all aware, like you said, it's your world is almost centered around technology now. And it's a lot tougher now than it's ever been. And I have no doubt believing it will be tougher tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And it's just going to keep going that way. But we can't really switch it off. We can't get away from it completely. And even when we try to delete the accounts that we have, the people that run these accounts don't want us to because they say it's deactivated for 30 days. And if you sign in again, it's still active. So you haven't actually deleted it at all. So I guess the question is, are we fighting a losing battle? You know, are we just to kind of bury our heads in the sand and just embrace the changes that are coming? Or I look at my parents in this example is they are terrified of new technology, even more so because my dad's a computer engineer, which I find bizarre. But he's terrified of it all these kind of high-tech things that don't actually play any part of your life until he gets to know them. So to give you an example, I'd purchased him some smart plugs and the Hive heating system. I thought it would make his life easier. His first reaction was, thank you very much, but I don't need that. But then we set it up and he loves it. You know, so is it a case of we just need to get used to it, or can we fight against it? Are we really dealing with technology that is completely useless to us, but we're just embracing it for the sake of it?
I don't think there's a case of us fighting against it. I think we're on this journey. We've committed so much so far. Everything that we want to do now, everything, even our books that used to be physical and now digital, everything we do is digital. And it's about embracing it because it is there to actually make us more efficient, to improve our experiences. Gone are the days where you have to turn up at a restaurant and, hope and pray that it's a really good restaurant to go to. You've got the reviews, you can actually, be able to understand it, how to get there, to be able to, be able to share experiences and grow in the experiences that you have. So I think there's, everything's developed for a reason, and it's developed for a reason to make our lives better in some way. And I think what we just need to be mindful of is that technology, the reason it's potentially a little bit damaging is because the information we put in, we still have control over the information and the data that we share with these apps. There's a lot in the background that is tracking our movements. There's a lot we can't control, but the readily available information that you say, when you spoke about the information available when you search, it's not illegal to search. No, open source intelligence, OnSint, is seen as a really technical thing that potentially is for spies and police to find information, but it's not. It's we all do it. Whenever we get sort of a new employee or a new partner, the first thing we do about them is Google them. We find out what is available on the internet about those people. So we do it by default, but all that information is information we put in, and it's and that information can be hidden and can be restricted. And I think just when we were talking about earlier, creating accounts that don't use your personal details and making sure that you hide your privacy settings, I think we have to embrace it because it does make our life richer, better, greater experience. We can achieve a lot more, see a lot more, but we do need to be mindful that it's there, and everything is capturing everything we do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, actually. We were talking about this the other day. The idea of the blue chip, like Google, Microsoft, Amazon, whatever, they're all capturing our data, our movements, and they're tracking basically everything that we do. The one that got me was Netflix. They track how long you stay on a particular thumbnail of a movie or TV program, and they kind of figure out what you like in terms of if you like boats or if you like planes, things like that, and they will show thumbnails of the TV programs with that image because they think you'll like it. That's kind of freaky, to be honest. That goes on to a level of technology that's
freaky,
just...
but it's also good because, to be honest with you, if I'm on Amazon and I'm looking at certain thing, to actually know what things might be similar. My Christmas has, rightly or wrongly, if I'm feeding the wrong beast, but my Christmas has just completely changed. I'm usually working up to sort of the 11th hour, and it's a mad rush, and I'm probably the most unreliable friend and family for getting gifts out there. However, this year, actually, everything's bought, everything's wrapped, everything's sorted. But to get those nudges of you might also like this helps helps me think of other presents and gifts ideas. So I kind of like that. I think it's just knowing that actually you are to a degree being manipulated. You are being probed. You're trying to, you know, being people are being suggestive over the things that you like. So as long as you're aware of the fact that these things are suggestions and they are trying to influence you to do something, providing you have that in mind and go, no, actually I'm going to have the willpower and the resistance to say no on this occasion or it's not right, you know, it's all there to as I say enhance and improve our experiences.
Definitely make us spend more. Absolutely. That I can't tell you the last time that I went on to Amazon and didn't put things in my shopping cart that I didn't want or didn't know I wanted. I'd sometimes fight the urge, but you know, sometimes I end up with stuff that I don't need, just because it was there and it was recommended. It's very, very clever. I think the thing that gets us is the fact that we didn't know at the start that this was happening.
But then it happens when you go into the supermarket. The reason we all come away with a full, you know, shopping trolley when we're hungry is because we see all these great deals. So it's no different from what happened in the physical stores. It's just prompted in you know, digitally in front of you. So there is that element of, you know, we've always been manipulated in the way that we shop and the way that we behave, down to the other pre-film. So it's again, it's there. It's just knowing that it's there, but we all... we're a want it, see it and have it now society. And you know, being mindful of that is important.
It's a lot more immediate and direct. We try our best to cut out the middleman as much as we can. So basically we're embracing the technology that's been given to us. Like you say, it's fantastic. I mean, it's enabled us to do things that we never thought was possible. We just need to be mindful of the fact that we can get caught up in it pretty much. I think now so more than ever, actually. I mean, obviously over the last better part of a year, most of us have been working from home, and the idea of working from home really scared a lot of people, particularly the older generation that was in charge of these companies. Maybe it was a trust issue, I'm not really sure, but I do enjoy the fact that they were forced into it to see what would happen. And I know I've got some friends and things that work for oil companies like Halliburton and things like that, and they'd said that the productivity level actually went up. They thought it would die down or at best maintain itself, but it actually went up. And I think it was the fact that all the employees thought they needed to prove something. They needed to prove that they could actually do it.
I think there's a couple of arguments behind it. One is you're not traveling as much, you're not commuting enough, your time is actually far more effective because you're getting a lot more out of it. I think the reverse of that is that there's a lot more going into the diary than there ever was. And when you have that reflective time, when you have that downtime, and I know that's something you're wanting to come on to in a little while, but to me, I think productivity has, you know, the fact that a meeting, you know, involved trying to coordinate diaries that would take months and months to coordinate. Well, actually, we're able to coordinate them, you know, within a heartbeat, and we're actually all able to see who's available when they're available. So efficiency is far greater. But I think, you know, productivity, there is an element of people do work in different ways. We're all different. We're all unique, and we have different similarly. The way that we learn is very different. Some people, you know, can need the people around them, they need the buzz of people in their environment in order to be able to make them feel, you know, motivated to do. Other people prefer not having the distractions, and I think on the whole there's a, you know, a lot more, I suppose, meaningful conversations happening because they're happening with a specific agenda topic in mind as opposed to the general chit chat. So organizations are definitely seeing the efficiencies there. I think there were a lot of organizations that were, because of that trust issue and because of not having that transparency, were really anti working from home because they didn't have it. And actually where they'd say we can't have a home working policy, well, yes, that's shifted. when it comes down to bottom line and profit and people still working, oh my goodness, it's amazing how we can adapt. And I think that's going to, you know, it's going to be a legacy that is really going to come out of 2020 that is really going to shift the way that we work in the future.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the downside to it all is we're going to have an awful lot of very large empty buildings because we don't need to occupy the same amount of space. But technology-wise and flexibility-wise, it's certainly a positive if we can controversially say that it's a positive that's come out of COVID. There's been obviously a lot of negatives, but there have been a couple of positives, we could say, this being one of them. I guess the genie's out of the bottle, really, in this one. We can't really go back to the way things were.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we're all seeing the savings. It's just trying to work out how that's gonna shift. So what support are we giving people for their home environments, fundamentally to make it more secure? You know, we've saved a lot of money by not having physical buildings, but do we need to help people concentrate on more on securing their home networks, on giving them education, not just education for themselves, but for their wider family as well? Because the insider threat that used to just be around your building, your employees, your suppliers, and anybody that would come into that, your insider threat now are your friends and your family and people that have access to basically what is your home office. So it's thinking about widening that scope from an educational point of view. But from a building's point of view, one of the things, you know, from us as an organization, saying, okay, well, we don't have that ability, we don't have the desire or the need to have that office space, but how can we use that space and that time to think about having really focused team building days, to have real focused strategy days, so that we still get together and we still meet, but potentially less often, but more, I guess, in a better environment? Why not invest that time and that money in actually making sure that the days that we do come together are really valuable? Because we need that human interaction. We need to see our peers every now and again. I think it's really important, because it also reduces a risk, which is people's paranoia as to what's going on and what are people thinking when they can't physically see, you know? So it's seeing the whites of people's eyes and knowing that actually my boss does trust me. He doesn't think I'm working from home and not doing the work and all the rest of it. And actually having those human interaction is the element that builds trust around it. So it's really important to balance it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you touched on a pretty interesting idea there as well, is the whole concept of, now that we are working from home, the higher ups, the chief executives, they're all sort of happy with how things are going. But the bigger issue lies in, now we're all connected to our home networks. So there's a huge problem there, because we need to tie into company data and all that. But also that now cyber criminals are aiming at more homes than businesses, because it's going to be a potentially easier target. Because I would say that people have been forced into working this way, but don't have the knowledge on how to do it.
Yeah, so there's for every negative, there's a positive. There is so many really, really good collaboration tools out there. Mm-hmm. And there's so many great collaboration tools that have a lot of security built in, that, you know, you're able to lock down access to the likes of Slack based on your domain control and what you're logging into. So actually, potentially, the sharing of information amongst your teams can be argued as secure. But because you've shifted what is that trusted network outside, and we're using a lot more collaboration tools, people have a lot more access to everything else. But because of some of these collaboration tools and the transparency they give you over information sharing, I would argue that for a lot of the smaller organizations, they've probably got more visibility now than they ever had, because they can actually see and monitor and track what is going in and what's going out. Sure. And also, you're putting the security controls into the business owner's hands and not just the outsourced IT team, because the configurations are easy to configure, they're easy to see. You're able to see and have control. Who do you want to share information with? Do you want to share people only within your network, or do you want to share out? And you can see that. I think what we need to be a bit more mindful of is those configuration of devices that allow people to come outside of those trusted apps. So are you allowing people to use their own mobile devices, their own PCs? In which case, what other apps do they have? What can they download? What can't they download? What can they share? And that's where the education really comes in, as to, okay, well, what is that acceptable and what isn't acceptable. I had a conversation last week, and there is an element of behavior and acceptance from some of the younger generations, is that when you build and create code, that actually you built it, so therefore it's yours, where fundamentally actually you're contracted to do that for a company, therefore that IP and that ownership stays with that company. And typically, historically, it wouldn't have been a problem, because you'd have a long tenure with an organization. But now what's happening is people are flitting between organizations, they're not staying with organizations as long, so they want to be able to say, oh, well, I built that code and I'd like to take it somewhere else. And I think, you know, there's a lot more degree of flexibility from a business point of view, as to, okay, who can we get to work on projects? Well, now the fact that we have no boundaries, that it doesn't matter where anybody is, we can pull anybody in for a short period of time or a long period of time on the contract. But, you know, but on the reverse of that is, we potentially, we've got employees that are working in other locations and sort of supporting their income. So it's just being mindful of, and the only way you're actually going to reduce that risk is being really honest and transparent. What is the expectations? What do you expect from that employee in terms of what is their, you know, what can they own and what don't they own? What do they have the rights to share and what don't they have the rights to share? And it's, yeah, that educational piece in that side is a bit of a big beast.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's obviously going to take up quite a lot of your time to tell people this and explain how it can be used. I get, obviously, you run a cybersecurity, I suppose, training company as a fundamental element of it, at least. It's obviously changed, I would say. So before you were training them on potentially phishing attacks or anything like that, but has it changed since we went into lockdown and we were all working from home? Obviously, the method has to have changed. You've probably done it online rather than in person. I suppose that's, I'm not sure if that's as effective. I don't know. Maybe you can, well, hopefully you can answer that for me.
Yeah, of course. Has it changed? Yeah, it has changed. I think to be fair, we always as an organisation concentrated on the people, because to us, fundamentally, it has to, in order for something to change behaviours and to change cultures and attitudes, you have to focus on what's important to individuals. So we've always done that as an organisation. But what is now shifting within the companies, that mindset that actually these frontline defenders are really, really important, and what they think and what motivates them and what emotional responses they have to the information is really important. Because historically it was very much if you're in our network and you're going to use our tools in our organization, you need to follow these policies, and what we need to do is check that you've read the policies, you accept the policies, and you see where they are. But these policies aren't as enforceable, or at least the boundaries have changed. Now you've got people working in their own home environments and their own personal environments, and that's where it's really, really important to think about, okay, what influences are impacting you in that home environment. We're a lot more comfortable, therefore we feel a little bit more trusting. The way that we receive information is a little bit different. Everything's changed, so you've got to make sure that, you know, you're really taking into account not just the organization and organizational controls, but what, you know, what's around that individual. Definitely, so there's a lot more personalized focus, and organizations really wanting to do that, a lot more wanting to empower people as well, and letting people know actually, you know, what's going to support you, what's going to safeguard you, what's going to make you, your family, and your, you know, safe and secure. So and an empowerment that actually is your responsibility. You know, we can't control in the same way, so we want you to take ownership for that. So there's a lot more sort of around that. In terms of communications, we've always done it online, but peer-to-peer influencing was a really significant point for us. It was really important that when we did campaigns that were company-wide, so that you had that element of buzz, that element of communication. And obviously, you know, you could share information by posters, screen displays, all these sort of things, which don't exist anymore. So how do you recreate that social proofing within the home environment? And the only way you can do that is think about what comms do you have going out. So if you're using Slack as internal communications, how do you get that messaging? How do you get those thought-provoking questions regarding the topic in hand? But it's, you know, we still do it. We've just shifted where we put that messaging, and making sure that actually when we're looking at trying to shift and change behaviours, you have to reinforce. So are you reinforcing it in your team meetings? Are you reinforcing it on your newsletters that you're sending out? What are you doing to make sure that messaging that would have been around the water cooler in front of the poster is now somewhere else? And it's just thinking a little bit smarter, but also thinking we are information overload city at the moment. We've got it coming in from every angle. So knowing that actually you can't just push comms out and expect it to be read. You've got to have something in there that is going to make somebody stand up and take note, which is either this is really important, or, you know, these guys really care about me. So that emotive messaging that, you know, that the criminals use in the phishing emails, you've got to put the same level of effort into your comms. If you don't put the effort in, don't expect it to be read. And that is fundamentally one of my biggest issues, is, you know, don't push out and expect people just to absorb. You have to push something out that sparks people's interest, that excites them, that interests them. And that's how you get them to really stand up and pay attention.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredibly difficult thing that you're trying to achieve, because most people would only contact their IT company if something went wrong. And 9 times out of 10, they're not interested in how it works or what to do about it. They're just interested that it does work and everything is fine, and they leave the rest to you. So if you're trying to...
But this leads to the earlier point that you made, which is, well, how do Amazon push those messages that make me think I want to buy that additional item like I did before? And it's about that programming. It's about that suggestive, that nudge. And, you know, people, we put so much effort into our sales and marketing activity as businesses to put the same, you know, just a fraction of that effort into marketing and selling cybersecurity to our teams would have a phenomenal return on investment. And I think that's the thing you sort of need to think about is, okay, what is your spend on marketing and sales for your product? If you invest a fraction of that into your teams, then you'll get a better return on investment for their behavior and their habits.
No, absolutely. I mean, it could be said the same for HR, of all things. I mean, HR has got to be regarded as one of the, not the dullest things, but it's obviously essential, but people are not very excited to read the new health and safety policy. And that's a problem. But with cybersecurity, it changes so quickly that you need to keep up with it. And if you can portray a message that does spark the interest, then people will, in fact, pay attention to it. They will read it. Also, the simplicity of it as well is quite hard to portray.
I think that's absolutely. I did a webinar last week, and it was regarding social media and just talking to people and what it is that their, you know, their privacy settings enable two-factor authentication, about just thinking about who's connecting with you and why. Would you let a random stranger suddenly walk into your party without questioning who they are? You wouldn't. And it's, to be fair, and it's cybersecurity. To most people, it's got this label that means it's technology when it isn't. We all know it's the majority of it is human behaviors. And I think there is a lot around the educational piece that actually says, to be fair, yes, it's constantly changing, but the fundamental things that make us insecure, that make us vulnerable, are behaviors and habits that we can change really, really easily. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of why sort of campaign-led sort of cybersecurity programs are really, really good. Focus on one thing and do one thing really, really well. And then that sort of breeds sort of good behavior. So, you know, why not make January the month where you just two-factor authentication on everything? Let's talk to everybody about having that second layer of protection, because that second layer of protection is no different from your house alarm, your double lock of keys. You know, just, you know, you don't buy something without looking for a review. Why wouldn't you double check something? And if you just concentrated on one thing and did it really, really well, and then moved on to the next, you'll find that the habits change. We're really intelligent individuals as a general rule. And when we can see something that is advantageous and beneficial to us and see how easy it is to implement, then we, you know, we pick it up really quite quickly. Mm-hmm. The problem we have is there is so much, arguably so much to be covered in cybersecurity. We try to cover it all as opposed to doing one thing and doing one thing right and then moving on to the next.
Yeah, I think that's the problem with a lot of people is they get bombarded with the information and say, look, you need to do this. And there's no way I'm going to do all of them, so I'll do none of them. Like you say, if you were to pick one, two-factor authentication obviously being a very important one, two locks for the one key sort of thing, it makes you so much more secure. It's not exactly a tricky thing to set up either once you really figure out how it's done. I think that's a great message to put across, actually. Do the one thing, we do it well, and then do the next thing. Brilliant. Yeah.
So just marginal gain and the return on behaviors is phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely it is. So the last question I've got is from a friend of mine, and I will say that he did reword it three different times because he read it to me and I kept picking it up differently. So I'll do my best here. So it feels like his work-life balance has taken a hit because he's now working from home because of the COVID situation. Mm-hmm. And working from home is new to him, and he doesn't feel like he ever switches off. Now, I've given him some tips and things like that, saying that you need to establish a routine. You know, the 9-to-5 thing is still very valid, even though you don't have the commute. I've also given him some pretty random ones of, like, put on your work shoes when you're working, and then when you take them off, it's sort of like a barrier. But he's asking how can he separate the personal and work life, because he's using his own devices, he's in his own home, there is no separation. You know, is there a tip that you can give him that might help that?
Oh, you're probably asking the wrong person, because I'm an absolute workaholic. But I think you know, 2020 has been a really random year. I think in some ways we've all managed to find fresh air, fields, walks we never even used to have. So that gave us a bit of an insight into things that we didn't do previously. I think for, you know, I've heard of people that when they come home, they have a shower, even if they're working from home, they have the shower to make the day wash away. I think the problem is it's still mentally there. Yeah. And that's the trigger is how do you, you know, washing, getting a shower at the end of the night is not going to make that thing go away. So, but I tend to think about, okay, how do we balance it? Less of a where does one end and where does one finish? Because there isn't that linear line. Mm-hmm. To me, it's thinking about, okay, what can I do that actually makes work more palatable and what makes home more palatable? Yeah. You know, I don't know, I'm not necessarily condoning that everybody does this, but there's certain times, there's certain calls that I can be on that is information absorbing, and I can unload and load the washing machine while I'm doing that. And that's one more thing that I don't have to do when I get home. And actually having the notifications and responding to somebody really, really quickly means that that job is done and out of the way. So I kind of want those interruptions if I know that actually I can give somebody a real straightforward answer. And that means that we've not got to wait three more days until that one's resolved. I can come back to work knowing it's fixed. So for me, it's more about making sure that you're actually just having a bit of a break, making sure that anything that's sticking in is mentally going to be in your head. There's no point trying to shut down and it not be there. If you can fix it, do it. And that's why the kind of the likes of the Slack, you know, I'm a terrible one. If something comes into my head at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, I will do it. But I insist for my teams that they have their notifications on do not disturb, so that actually if it's in their head and their mind's thinking about it, they can look at it and they can respond when it's appropriate to those guys. Yeah. But the other thing for me would be find a hobby, find something you like doing and that, you know, shuts off. For me, I'm learning how to skydive at the moment. And, you know, there is very little you can think about when you're trying to think, okay, I'm dropping at 120-140 miles an hour. I need to work out how to pull my chute and there's nothing else that's going into it. And then when I'm up there, you know, I've tried mindful meditation and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But if that thought's in your head, sometimes it's better just to get it out, get it done and move on. So I don't know if that's really helped in any way.
It certainly helped me. I mean, we sound pretty similar actually in the respect of if you've got something on your mind and it, regardless of the time it pops into your mind, I will just go and do it as well. So it's quite interesting. I'm intrigued by this learning to skydive thing. That's quite cool. So yeah, maybe we could chat about it. I've done it once. It was a great fun. So yeah, that's pretty cool. So normally what we do is we kind of round off the episode with a sort of a tip from the expert, if you like. So a cybersecurity piece of advice, just a quick thing that someone can go away and do themselves, because cybersecurity is in fact 90% user and 10% technology. Mm-hmm. I might even have that right, maybe 95, I'm not really sure. But it's mainly the user that is, I don't want to say the problem, but if something is to go wrong, it's a human to blame, it's not the computer. So is there a piece of advice that you would really kind of emphasize? Mm-hmm.
For me, from an information security professional point of view, is don't be a hypocrite. Okay, so make sure you do it and do it well. So I would say to anybody, think of 12 points that you want to cover next year that you're going to do and you're going to do really, really well. So, but make sure that you share that with your friends and your family. So, you know, as I say, I touched on two-factor authentication. Make sure, have you got it on all your accounts? And I'm talking all of them. And have you made sure that your wife, your kids, your husbands, you know, everybody is doing it and making sure. And that to me is the biggest thing we all talk about. You know, it's got to be done and it's really, really important. But do we share those messages with our family and do we make sure they do it and why? And I think that the reason we don't is because we think, oh my God, we don't have a lifetime to teach our mothers information and cybersecurity. But if you made it sort of, you know, one thing and you picked one thing a month and did it well for yourself and for your family, then it's that small things would make a big difference.
That's a great piece of advice, actually. Yeah, I mean, the idea of teaching your family is quite a tricky one. I know my fiance really hates me at the minute because I've made her use a password manager and two-factor authentication. Those are the only two that I've told her about. But yeah, she really doesn't like it. It feels like it takes too long. I was, well, at least you haven't been hacked, so What can you do?
Yeah, and it's habit, isn't it?
It is.
Anything after a while, when we've been doing it enough, it's habit, and every single online account has it. So why not use it? For me, it'd be for the industry to actually put it on by default. Mm-hmm. And to set our privacy settings to private by default, they mm-hmm. would be the two things that I would, in this day where we're looking to recruit and employ people in different areas, one of the first things that we do is reach out on social media, and the amount of profiles, Facebook profiles that aren't locked down to friends, and then you find their partners, and then, you've gone down this rabbit warren of, oh my goodness, is this the right individual, because this is what they're up to. And people are like, whoa, that's a little bit stalkerish, but it's what we do. Go back to that earlier point of the Absolutely. Information's out there. So if it's out there, we will look for it. So it's only out there because we put it out there.
Yeah, we're our own worst enemies, really, on this one. So, yeah, what can you do? But yeah, I mean, in terms of convenience of technology, I mean, it's not anything new. I mean, we're talking about when the contactless payment card came out. I looked at that in two different minds. I said, that is brilliant. That's a great idea. Just tap and go. But then I thought to myself, how long does it really take for me to type in my PIN number? It's only four numbers. It surely doesn't take more than 10 seconds to insert the card and then go. So,
but now with the likes of Apple Pay and COVID, you haven't got to touch anything.
Exactly.
But you can spend all your fortune. So it has its benefits, and it keeps
Absolutely.
that track. For every positive, there is something to be mindful of, I think, is the thing. So
just I agree.
Know your own behaviors and know the impacts.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's nothing new. It's just a different way of doing it. We've had this for as long as we've been alive, really. There's been something come along, but there's been a negative to it as well. When we created currency, people counterfeited currency. That's nothing new. That's just the same thing here, but we're just doing it in a different mm-hmm. way. So yeah, it's been quite interesting, actually.
That's what makes us human, is the fact that we adapt and we evolve and we get better at it, but we just need to get better at our privacy a little bit quicker than we are doing.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So what we will do is, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to your company website that people can have a look at in the company training profiles and things like that. And they can get in touch with you, hopefully, to see how they can better their security. But I want to thank you for your time, Melanie. It has been fantastic. And well, hopefully we can do it again at some point soon. Maybe touch on some of the subjects that we have in a little bit more depth. Who knows? But thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. It's been nice chatting to you.
Thank you. Thanks. That is all we have for this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a like and subscribe to hear more from experts around the globe. And head over to opensourceguardian.com for more great content, all targeting the world of cybersecurity. Until next time, remember, it shouldn't be complicated, so we don't make it so.